Let us now whiz over to what I'm reliably informed is a rather bleak morning to get poor old Bruce Shapiro out of bed because, well, there's been a time zone change, so it's now, what, Bruce, 6 in the morning?
Oh, it's a truly pathetic 6 in the morning, and no one is feeling less thoroughbred and horsey than people in the Northeast on this dark.
Well, there is something up. Something to be won, and that's a victory in the Supreme Court. Tell us about this this interesting battle about God and politics.
Well, yeah, no, it is interesting, actually. And, well, there's all kinds of politics roiling around. You know, we've got the healthcare thing going on, and today is local election day, speaking of horse races, big races in Virginia, New Jersey, and elsewhere. One of the more important, the first really important Supreme Court decision of the new term, first important case is going to be heard today. And it involves the very common in the U.S. practice of local councils and state legislatures, not only invoking God in as they open their business, as indeed the Supreme Court itself.
I love the way you say that, God.
It's still early.
You're a funny American.
But whether it's okay for legislatures to bring in volunteer chaplains to open sessions with sectarian invocations, explicitly Christian or Muslim or Jewish, but generally Christian and generally very specifically Christian prayers, involves a town in upstate New York near Rochester, where a few years ago the city council in opening its affairs began inviting ministers. And actually, one of the folks involved in that community said, "This is not good. The U.S. Constitution says no establishment of religion." And here we've got all of these ministers, one after another, being asked to come and give these prayers that talk about God, and not just God, but Christ and the Holy Spirit. Occasionally we throw in an imam or a rabbi to give a Muslim or Jewish prayer, but it's basically Christian prayer in the legislature. And this is coming up before the court.
Has the case been brought by atheists or Christians?
Well, it's Americans United for Separation of Church and State has been one of the champions of this case, as has the ACLU. There are atheists and religious people involved in it. The crux of it is that in order to take part in town business, say the plaintiff's lawyers in this case, in order to take part in the town business, if I want to go, you know, get a zoning variance for a new outdoor shower at my house, I'm going to have to sit through a Christian prayer. And that, goes the argument, is the constitutional violation. It actually is going to be a very emotional case because, of course, this country is deeply divided on matters of religion. The last time a case like anything like this came up before the Supreme Court was in 1980, when there was a similar case from Nebraska. But that was about kind of mushy non-sectarian prayers by chaplains to legislatures. This time, it's going to be about explicitly whether a particular God, not just God in general, but a particular God has a place in public discourse. And, you know, the Supreme Court is conservative, so you might expect a majority to approve this. On the other hand, it does go against sort of the libertarian strain, which even on the right is part of the argument right now. So it'll be an interesting thing.
Talking about the libertarian strain reminds me of Ron Paul, and it turns out that Senator Paul is a plagiarist.
Oh, this is an interesting and fun story. It may not be the most consequential of a scandal in American history, but it actually is tarnishing rising star of the right. You and I have talked a bit about Senator Rand Paul, who's the son of Congressman Ron Paul, the anti-war presidential candidate. Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, ophthalmologist, is a rising star of the Tea Party and is kind of, along with Ted Cruz, the leader of that faction of the party, and certainly a big libertarian. But they've been a kind of slowly dripping over the last week series of revelations that began with someone discovering that Rand Paul had plagiarized part of a speech from the Wikipedia entry about a really crappy 1970s science fiction movie. And then the discovery that
I find this delightful. What crappy science fiction movie?
You know, it's early, so the name of this film is escaping me at the moment. It was a film.
I know it's early in the morning, but you never.
It was a film involving the freezing of the taking over of people by alien, taking over the human race by alien forces.
Oh, I've seen hundreds of those. Okay, move on.
And then it turns out that he plagiarized the Wikipedia entry on a much better known film for another recent speech, the film Stand and Deliver, which is about education in South Central Los Angeles, a movie about Latino school teacher who promotes calculus and algebra to students who are supposed to not be able to do that kind of stuff. And then it's gotten just really wild in the last 24 hours because it turns out that he plagiarized other stuff, plagiarized an entire report from the Heritage Foundation, big chunks of a report, for a speech he was giving, and for testimony before Congress. The guy is evidently a serial plagiarist, and the funny thing is they're not kind of not confessing to this. He's responded not by either saying "oops," which is what Joe Biden did about 20 years ago when it was discovered that he'd cribbed part of a speech from Neil Kinnock. Nor is he saying, well, it was all the fault of the speechwriter. It seems not to be, because Rand Paul is simply saying that this is just a bunch of hacks and hypocrites who are out to get me. He's refusing to acknowledge it at all, and it is...
What he should do is plagiarize a good response.
Or even plagiarize a good apology.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
You know, plagiarize Bill Clinton's apology for Monica Lewinsky. I did not have plagiarism with that woman. The interesting thing, actually, is that it's the second big swipe at his character. There's a local newspaper in Kentucky that looked into Senator Paul's resume, his CV, in which he says that he's the president of an ophthalmology organization, the founder of an ophthalmology organization. It turns out that this organization doesn't really exist.
doesn't prevent him being the boss of it.
And he's refused to answer questions about that as well. So what we've actually got here is a series of emerging questions about the personal character of someone who has positioned himself as a likely presidential candidate in 2016 and is certainly one of the leaders of the quickly evolving right. So it's a more consequential case than the sort of small stakes issues involved would suggest.
Okay, before I whiz off to London to discuss this person with green teeth and very bad very bad manners, let's have a look at Obama's continued problem with the healthcare rollout. It really is a debacle, isn't it?
Secretary of Health and Human Services Sebelius has described it as a debacle, and there's kind of two levels to it. The first is the spectacular ongoing problems with the rollout of the website, and you know, again, you have to wonder how a government that can have the NSA spying on all of our cell phones can't manage to have a website that functions in an age of Amazon.
You know, it probably hacks Lucy Hughes Hallett's phone, doesn't it?
Well, that is probably. I mean, my own theory on this is that they should actually give Edward Snowden clemency and on grounds that he remake the website, the healthcare website, and solve the problem. But the other issue that's coming out now is that a lot of insurance companies are sending clients, several million clients have gotten letters saying, oops, we're dropping your coverage. You're going to have to now go into the healthcare marketplace. We don't want to insure you anymore, or the Healthcare Act requires changes that make us not able to insure you. This is annoying people, especially because President Obama had promised that if you like your insurance, you'll be able to keep it. But it's also even more important, just giving another rock for the Republicans, who, of course, have spent the last 5 years trying to shoot this thing down, another rock throwing at them saying, see, it doesn't work. So it's...
Well, I have to tell you, I got onto the website quite easily, and I'm now covered for my ailments here in New South Wales by Obamacare. Bruce, thank you very much for that. Bruce Shapiro, columnist with The Nation magazine, executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University, and for well over 10 years now, our man, not in Havana, but in the United States of America. A little bit of music, maestro, and then I'm going to talk to Lucy Hughes Hallett.